Welcome to Spectrum from China America Radio, a weekly public service production featuring news, information, and stories of interest to our China America Radio listeners in the United States and around the world. Now, here's this week's host, Steve Warren.
Our guest this morning on Spectrum is Kenny Yu, and Kenny is somebody who I met at one of the recent small business expos. And I guess I can start, Kenny, just by saying that for the most part, we could call you a filmmaker. Let's start with that. Is that close to accurate?
Yeah. that's what I do. Yeah. I've been doing for the last decade, literally. Yeah.
So let's get to know you a little bit better. You're from the originally around the New York area, but tell me about your family background. Obviously, a lot of our listeners come from all over Asia, all over places in China. So tell us a little bit about your early days, your family background.
My mom's from Chinatown. My dad's from Hong Kong. And luckily, both of them come from their same village of Toisan, which is in southern China. My great-grandparents actually immigrated here back in, I think, like early 1920s. And it's crazy because how my great-grandfather came here was that he came here first, but then just to bring my great-grandmother here. And little after, he was sold to the Philippines for 20 years. So he was literally a slave for 20 years before having to come back and earn his freedom.
That's an unusual story, but not that unusual considering the times and considering the era that that people lived in. And people were, in fact, bought and sold on a rather regular basis, whether from Asia, from Africa, or wherever. Your upbringing, where were you born and where did you start life and go to school?
That's a crazy story because I was born in Chinatown, but shortly after, probably like a couple months, we moved to Connecticut. And then 2 years after, I moved to Maine. And then when I turned 5, we moved to Hong Kong for a couple years. And I went to elementary school there till like second grade. Then I came back to Maine and stayed there until 4th grade. And I came and we moved down to Jersey for my 5th grade on to my 8th grade. Then moved back to Hong Kong for high school for another 4 years. And then I came to Long Island for CW Post for 4 years of college. And then I moved out to Queens, Flushing for a year. And then I moved to Jersey for the rest.
So you've got you're well-traveled, if nothing else. Were a lot of those early moves, your family taking work in other cities and other countries? You obviously didn't have much choice in the matter.
Yeah, I didn't have much say in the travels. It was mainly because my mom was indecisive of where she wanted to live. I mean, outside of just moving from state to state or to country, we moved a lot within towns, like different counties and different towns. Even within Hong Kong, we live, in several different, provinces, mm-hmm. right? And so I want to say within my lifetime, I moved over probably 50, 60 times.
Wow.
And changing schools a lot.
So where did the art come in? Where did the visual art aspect of your training, your schooling? When did you get interested in film, in cameras, in visual arts, in what's on the screen, small or large?
So my family background with my mom's side is that they're all lawyers. Most of them are lawyers, or they deal with law somehow. Mm-hmm. My dad, he's an architect, so two vastly different worlds, right? So growing up, I wanted to be a lawyer, but then I also had an interest in just plays and theater. So I wrote my first school play that was published in Maine when I was 5. And in fact, one of my best friends at the time said that inspired him to become a filmmaker himself. He now works in Atlanta. He shoots all the time. And then as I grew older, I thought, maybe I should get back into law. And after my mom was studying for her law degree, and I saw the piles of books that she had to read, and I hate reading. I said it was stupid because we could just watch a movie on this. You know, it's so much faster. So I left that, and I had more interest in the video side of things. So, and I was always a creative person, and I love music a lot, and I love watching films. And my brother and I actually had this thing when we lived in Jersey. Every weekend we had to watch a new film in theaters. It was just a brotherly bond. So that got me into filmmaking when I grew older.
So when did you actually start working on creating your own projects and taking it into the commercial marketplace? And what were some of your early projects about?
My first commercial aspect of it, where it was like a paid project, right, was a U.S. Open. That was the first gig that was more commercialized versus a private. I got hired to work the U.S. Open in 2011. It was nothing that I ever expected, because everything I learned in school, it was 99% of it was not applicable to the real world. It was something completely different. And
people find that out actually too late in many cases.
Yeah, it was vastly different. And I had worked for ABC at the time, and then not long after the U.S. Open, I had got hired to work for ABC Productions, and I was also working. I got trained on Martha Stewart, and then we had our own show called The Revolution. Not Revolution, the drama series, but The Revolution with Tim Gunn and Ty Payton, where it was a talk show. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's where I got my first.
And the U.S. Open you're talking about is the U.S. Open Tennis.
Yep.
Here at the Tennis Center in near Flushing.
Yep.
So that's right here in the backyard. So what are you doing these days? Obviously, we met at the Small Biz Expo, and we were struck up a conversation. You came over to our China America radio booth. So now you're trying to help companies, I guess, visualize themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sort of make sense?
Yeah, basically marketing the product or services.
So if a company, whether it's, I see you've done some music videos and some things like that, is it kind of like TV commercials or the little trailers and things that you see in the movie theaters that promotes various things? I mean, try to fill me in on all of this, because we are all exposed to 10,000 visual images every day in our lives, and they all come from a very different place. And so I'm trying to track back, you know, what you have on the screen now back to where you'd like to be going with it.
So, coming from a film background, I understood the aspects of just marketing and how important it is, right? Because it's one of those things where you cannot not have a budget for it, but you may not make the money back from marketing. It's a do or die kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, with recent years, I want to say there's been many platforms with social media and a lot of film and conventions or events, they use these platforms to reach out to the vast medium and the larger audience, right? So I thought to myself, why not, you know, tap into the marketing side of just using social media to market their services. And so what we do is we shoot videos, and our company is focused on video marketing and promotions. It's what some people may call social media marketing, but we focus on the video side of it, versus some may dab into more photography or just pictures or images. We focus mainly on videos and how to engage the audience via these videos on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Pinterest and stuff like that, where you can expose and influence them via these videos. And what's great about it is that with the last, 2 years, now you don't even have to click the videos on Facebook or Instagram. These just automatically play without right. sound. Yeah. So people are engaging it. I hate to say it, but they're being engaged with or without their consent. Well,
it's very involuntary these
yeah.
days. Yeah. And you have your business, you have a partner that you work with in this business. You guys have worked together for a couple of years putting these projects. He unfortunately can't be with us today. But how did you start your company, and how are you marketing yourselves?
Jeremy is my business partner, okay. Jeremy Snipe. He studied video as well when he was in college. And how we met was through a small convention that's in Castle Point, New Jersey. It's actually in the college. It's very small. It's very community-based. And I had an interest in it because at the time, I had gotten into conventions like New York Comic Con. And my girlfriend at the time made me try this thing called cosplay, which is costume play. It's where people dress up as their favorite characters from either comic books or video games. And they make their costumes and they wear it to these conventions.
Right.
And so I had an interest in a small neighborhood convention nearby. It's right outside of New York. It's in Hoboken. And it's called Castle Point. And I had met Jeremy through a friend, and he was cosplaying at the time as one of the characters from Pokemon. I'm not really familiar with Pokemon, so it was pretty cool because I saw a lot of really good cosplays and costumes, and we had come from the video side, and from that we started hanging out more when I moved to Jersey. And because he lived nearby, he lived in Irvington in New Jersey. So he would come over a lot and we would talk about our interests in comic books and video games and stuff. And we had worked previously with another company who wanted to shoot more videos focused on cosplay and conventions.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, after our conflict of interests, because they wanted to focus on more just advertising just costumes and the people who are wearing these costumes, we wanted to focus on marketing. So we built our company today, Takarama and Friends, on that aspect of just marketing and helping these people market themselves. So we want to be known as the company where we're able to give such opportunities to be able to go up to bigger companies like these video game companies to maybe even pay these cosplayers to advertise their games.
So your company name is Taco Ramen.
And Friends, yeah.
And Friends. If people wanted to see some of your work, they would go to your Facebook page.
Yeah.
And spell out or say it clearly so they understand how to search for you.
Our company name is Taco Ramen and Friends, and it's spelled out like Taco Ramen, as in like the ramen
right.
cup.
Noodles.
Yeah, like the ramen noodles. And it's just the letter N, Friends.
N, Friends. It's okay. Yeah. Good. All right. Well, that's easy to find. So I hope that our listeners, we have a lot of young professional people that are into all kinds of visual things. Certainly many of them attend the Comic-Con and dress up. As they also are into music videos and anime and games, on their phones, on their tablets, on wherever. What are your upcoming dreams? What would you like to be doing if your adventure here takes a direction? What do you think you'd like to be doing down the road?
Our company mission is to be able to be in a position where we're able to give opportunities. So I pitched this idea to multiple producers and they didn't understand how marketable this community is, and with the uprising of social media and just the culture of just the Asian culture and the nerd culture of it is becoming huge in the recent years, from just understanding the analytics of it.
And that's nerd culture in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, you have all these films. Like, Wonder Woman just came out, I think, like, last week.
It's huge, yeah.
And in the weekend, it broke box office. It made over $200 million. That's unheard of. And most of the cast is female. You know, this is great. This is, you know...
And directed.
Yeah. It's a great direction, and it's a great direction and a great influence for future filmmakers, you know? And I don't see, you know, nerd culture going anywhere with this because everybody loves comic books. Everyone's reading comic books.
You don't have to invent something brand new. You can take a relatively old concept, i.e. Wonder Woman, and keep reinventing it, which is one of the great things about some of these characters that are in the public domain that you are allowed to play with and reinvent and recreate. So it gives you guys a real wide open, clean slate, you know, to invent things.
Yeah, and it's crazy where it's been from, you know, back in the 90s to now, where you have, like, you know, over a dozen superhero movies in the year. And what we want to do is we see a lot of work being put into these, you know, cosplays, right? These costumes. And when you go up to them, ask them how much they spent, it's nowhere near, you know, the Hollywood budget. And I say, why can't, you know, understanding from the film side of it, why can't filmmakers or like big production companies hire these people to make their costumes for a fraction of the budget? You know, it doesn't make any sense. They make just as good, if not better, costumes than the costume designers on set.
So thinking big may mean thinking small.
Yeah.
As you move ahead, as the screens that we watch things on get smaller, on phones or on tablets, there's no reason to believe that the talent pool that provides those goods and services can also come from a smaller place.
Yeah, and we want to be able to be in a position where we're able to give these type of opportunities to the people who are really passionate about making these costumes for these characters. And I could see it being a huge thing, a bigger thing than now, because in recent, you know, months, actually, I think Honda released a commercial that was only directed. They released a car that was advertised towards cosplayers, people who go to conventions. They actually mentioned that, you know, hey, this car can fold in a way where you could fit all your props and costumes, and you could still drive, you know, to another state, you know. And they hired a cosplayer to really promote this car. Another fast food chain advertised, like, hey, you know, when you're at these conventions, you could pick up food nearby, or you could just ask for delivery and stuff. You get a discount. These big companies are starting to pay attention to this market because people are starting to acknowledge its existence as well as its influence to not only to films or conventions or events, but just in general, that people love this stuff. People love nerd stuff. I had to use the word nerd because I guess it has to deal with how back in, you know, the 80s and the 90s, where you were bullied if you were a nerd. If you liked, you know, comic books, you didn't have many friends. So now it's like everyone wants to be a nerd.
I know.
So.
Now there's safety in numbers.
Yeah.
The uprising of the nerds is right before our eyes. Our guest has been Kenny Yu. Kenny, thank you very much for stopping by China America Radio. Good luck. I look forward to seeing some more of your stuff. Maybe we can work together on something one of these days. But I appreciate it. And just one quick question before we go. Is your family on board now with what you're doing in your life, considering their backgrounds?
Not at all. Not at all. They still think it's
still
a joke.
Cross their fingers, think you're going to go to law school, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Get a real job.
Oh, that like that could happen, right? Hey, thank you very much, Kenny. I appreciate your stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
Join us every weekend for Spectrum on China America Radio, a weekly public service program featuring news, information, lifestyle experiences, and stories of interest to our listeners in the United States and around the world. If you have suggestions for future topics or guests to be featured on an upcoming Spectrum program, send them to us at programming@chinaamericaradio.com.